Lazarus, come forth. I can't explain to you what it felt like to be resurrected. I know you probably thought I was going to come out in grave clothes, and I thought about it, but I was afraid you'd think it was more Halloween than Easter. So as I began to think about what I wanted to share with you, I stepped back to say, I'm a miracle. And I worded that correctly. I didn't say I received a miracle, though I did, but I am a miracle. And I did receive a miracle. I received a miracle in the sense that I was brought from death to life. I can tell you all that I didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel, and there was no group of angels coming to usher me in. I didn't go up to heaven or down to hell. I slept in the grave. I didn't just come to death's door. I went into Sheol, into the grave itself, into the tomb, and rested there. Until Jesus called me to come up and rise again to have a new life. I have to back up to give you some context. You see, I'm Lazarus of Bethany. And with our connection, you could say I was an ardent follower. Yes, you might even use the term disciple. But I was much more than that. A brother. A best friend. You might use terms like soulmate today. In Scripture, it says that David and Jonathan's heart were knit together. That's Jesus and I. He was my person. He understood me, and he came into my presence, and I understood him, and he wasn't ashamed to tell the world that he loved me. And yes, loved me in a different way than the rest, because sometimes our hearts correlate and respond, and I was connected with him. I can't just say it was me. My sisters, Mary and Martha, also were connected in a powerful way. They were so hospitable to Jesus. Jesus, even though he was the one who, where foxes have holes and birds of the ground have nests, Jesus didn't have any place to lay his head except for this little town of Bethany where Lazarus, myself, and Mary and Martha lived. He would come to pull away from the pressures of ministry, where his words didn't need to be guarded in parables, where he could share from his heart what was going on and knew it would be received and accepted, where there was no pressure to perform or testing of everything that went on. There was just love and acceptance and the incredible hospitality of my sisters with food. He would come and rest at our house as a place to come together. And we were happy to provide him with that hospitality. Oh, don't mistake it. We received much more than we gave. How could I tell you of what it's like to have a sister who's gone through so much struggle, who was abused and then used that abuse as a way to escape and went to Magdala, and there at Magdala did unspeakable things, and how Jesus found her there and drove out seven demons and drew her back to himself and restored her to our family. It's true that she who was forgiven much loved much. And you could see it when he came to our house, you could see how she responded to that love. And me, what do you say to somebody who's given you your life, restored you to being again? I am correct in saying that I have received a miracle, but I was also correct in saying I am a miracle. Simeon is the word that's used in the Greek for miracle. It means a sign, and it's a sign miracle. And John uses it seven times in his gospel to talk about seven miraculous signs that were given to the people so that they might believe. And I'm one of those signs. The first sign was the sign of the miracle at the pool of Bethsaida. And I want to back up and say, when I want to talk about the water into wine and how that took place, there's a miracle that follows in line. In John, Jesus says that all of these things, John writes, all of these things are written. And if all the things were written, there wouldn't be enough places for them to be held. And all the miracles that were recorded are recorded for their benefit. But these were written that you might believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and that by believing you might have eternal life. See those signs. The first sign coming in this wedding, it was a family kind of event, and we were all together there. Mary, Mother Mary, that is, was in charge of the punch bowl. She was the one who was supposed to distribute the wine to the group, and she came to Jesus to express the problem, as we all did when we had a problem. That was the place it was natural for us to go, to Jesus, to lay our problems at his feet. And she came with a double-edged need. One, the need for those two who are hosting the feast to not lose face. And two, this was the opportunity, because the family was all gathered and Jesus had not as yet performed a miracle, to demonstrate that Jesus was just who she had said, the divine Son of God, the Messiah, the miracle worker. And this was his opportunity to show himself. She came with the request, that double-edged request, and Jesus took some 150 gallons of water and turned it into wine, and it became a miracle that was well known. But you see, I mentioned each of these miracles are sign miracles. They have a message to convey. There's a miracle on the outside, but a spiritual message on the inside. The miracle on the outside was to say these forms of shape, these ceremonial jars, are just like the religion of the Pharisees, just like the Jewish religion that had all kinds of form but is empty inside. And Jesus had come to take and fill it up from the inside out and form a religion that lived. His first miracle was to tell them that he had come to give them a new religion, or if you would, a revised religion. That first miracle led to the second. Capernaum, some 25 miles away, they heard the message. And if you would, as they gathered there, Chusa, who was the steward to Herod, Chusa and his wife Joanna had a son, and that son ended up being near death. And having heard of the miracles, Chusa didn't just send a servant, he himself came and begged in front of everybody else. This incredible man, a servant of Herod, came and begged that Jesus would heal his son. And Jesus didn't even go. He just granted him the wish as if by his own authority it was so. And he just said, your son is healed. And amazingly, Chusa believed. And Chusa just picked up and walked back home. And when he got there, he was told that the exact hour when his son had revived was the hour when Jesus had said that a miracle would take place and that he performed that miracle. It was a message. A message that God can take and give life if there's just faith. To a whole group of unbelievers, he was saying, all it takes is to believe. Will you believe? His third miracle, sign miracle, as John calls them, his third miracle took place at the pool of Bethsaida, also called the House of Mercy. Jesus went to the House of Mercy and found there the dregs of humanity, and they were all there before him, each hoping to find a loophole so that they could be healed. They'd already gone to the priest and they'd already gone to the physicians, and there was no hope except for they could hopefully have the stirred waters be thrown in at that point and be healed. Jesus finds the worst case, a man some 38 years having been begging for, waiting for some sort of healing, and Jesus comes forward and asks him, "Do you want to be made whole?" The man doesn't even give a good answer, talks about the waters. And Jesus commands him, "Rise, take up your bed, and walk." And he does. Which I have to say, since it was on the Sabbath, didn't bring him great favor with the Pharisees. In fact, they started to find an investigation process by which they could accuse Jesus and draw him out of the populace and put him on trial. The man, being simple, just answered their theological questions. Whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know. But this one thing I do know, that where I was blind, now I see. And Jesus used that miracle, and I could tell you more about it, but Jesus used that miracle to talk to those who thought they were in the know and said to them, "Whereas you think you see, I have come to give sight to those who recognize they're blind and to call those who think they see so that they can see that they're really blind." An alert, a message in which he's calling them to say, it's your opportunity to choose. It's your opportunity to decide. The fourth miracle, the feeding of the 5,000. It was an outgrowth of the miracles where Jesus is traveling from place to place and he's supplying the spiritual needs of the people and they're coming to hear him. And they gather together on the plains and you can see them and their hearts are fastened to his every word and they stay on through the day, many of them not having come prepared for the timing and hungry. And Jesus sees that not only do they have spiritual hunger, but physical hunger. And he calls for us, the disciples, the followers, he calls for us among him to come and perform a miracle, and we weren't prepared for that either. Jesus performed this miracle, taking 5 loaves and 2 fishes and multiplying it and feeding the multitude. And with that, everybody saw his power, and they decided that we would raise him up and make him the king that he had come to be, the kingly Messiah. We were ready to march into Jerusalem and proclaim him king. And he dismissed the whole group. It's true that he claimed to be the bread of life and he's the one that sustains us. And if they were listening through the miracle, he was saying that he can supply all our needs. It doesn't matter what's there, physical or spiritual. He can supply our needs. The kingdom that he had come to bring was one that would supply all of our needs if we would just trust him. From there, he sent us on, and I have to tell you, as the disciples themselves were all disillusioned, all the followers of God who were part of that group to make him king, because he had just dismissed that opportunity. We believed him to be the Messiah. We were ready to make him Messiah, and he sent us away to the other side. The disciples themselves were going forward in a boat and they were going to the other side, some 6 miles from one to the eastern side, some 6 miles apart. And they had gone and or in the early watch in their minds, the storm had already started brewing as they were trying to figure out who Jesus is and what he's really doing. 3 miles out, the trip would have probably only taken at most 2 hours. They were only halfway across the lake, 3 hours there trying to fight that storm. And Jesus, like an apparition, comes walking to them in the midst of their crisis, and all were terrified. But his message to them, don't be afraid, I am. And with that, he calmed the sea and the winds. And even the disciples who had known him were astonished to say, this is a man whom even the elements obey. Certainly, he's God. All those looking on and believing should have trusted in that same thing, in that same miracle, to recognize that he is the one who's the power over the elements itself. If they could have believed, if they could have seen, if they could trust in their storm. And before I go on, I want to say, are you in a storm? Have you been tracking the signs up until this point for yourself to see how you respond? Have you been asking from yourself, do I expect a miracle and a sign in a certain way before I'll believe? Are you looking for yourself and trying to get yourself out of your predicament and your struggle? Are you facing a storm and thinking that you're the one who needs to get yourself out when Jesus is right there? He says, don't be afraid, I am. Claiming his power, his ability, and understanding his character, that he cares about us, that he cares about the storms, that he cares about the struggle. That storm, the fifth sign. The sixth miracle John records is as the group of disciples are walking through, and there they find a blind man, Celadocius. He's there, and they wonder out loud, so to speak, whose problem was this, that he's being punished by God with blindness? Is it his? Like, maybe did he sin in the womb? Or is it his parents and it's being carried on for them? And Jesus simply answers, it's neither. But this is that the Son of God's power might be seen. And there he reaches down and takes and spits in the mud and wipes it on their eyes and tells them to go wash in the pool called Siloam, which means sent. Go wash in the pool called sent. And he comes back seeing. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? How the blind work. How they deal with the problems. I come to that picture and say that was the sixth sign. And I'm the seventh. It happened so quickly. We didn't have a name for the disease in my era, but you might call it sepsis. It was a quick infection. I started with the fever and then broke out, and soon I was so weak I could hardly move. The issues of my ability to breathe, they recognized instantly, and they went and they spoke quickly to Jesus. The one whom you love, the one whom you love is sick. Now, Jesus was about a day's trip from me, where he had been baptized, where John the Baptist had been baptizing. He was there at that land, and he was there, and it's only about a day's travel. But he didn't move. And actually, John records that he waited there 2 days before he started coming. Can you imagine? My sisters were beside themselves. They knew that Jesus loved us, and yet he hadn't responded. They were broken. They were despondent. They were disheartened. They were drained. And as time passed, I was dead. The mourning went on. The paid mourners came and they lined the tombs with their tears in bottles to show their sympathy and their pain for the hurt that was going there. And they were there expressing their grief. And they were waiting, and they were waiting. 4 days passed. Everyone knows. In 4 days, there's no possibility. Even the pagans wouldn't believe that a spirit could be joined back to the body in their minds and raised up. It was clear there was no hope. I've been approached multiple times to explain that experience where I was there, but I want to say it's like a dreamless sleep. I just was unconscious and then nothing until the words of Jesus raising me up. I searched through how it went for me and I start thinking about the process and I start to ask myself, how could this happen? How could those who Jesus loved appeal to him and he not do anything? You see, Jesus has his own timing. Sometimes we think he's late, but he's always just on time. Jesus arrives, and Martha, being pretty bold, says, "Jesus, I'm glad you're here, but you know, if you would have been here earlier, the one you love wouldn't have died." And I know now that God still grants you everything that you ask. And if you ask, he could be resurrected. Jesus turns to her, and though the conversation is extended, he says, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, even if he should die, yet he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die." "Do you believe this?" he asks. "Oh, yes, I believe," she says. "I know that my brother will rise in the resurrection." But Jesus had proclaimed himself as the resurrection. And he comes to the tomb. And he has them roll back the stone, because he always wants us to be able to have a part in the plan of salvation. Would you say amen? He has them roll back the stone, and then he raises his hands as if a public prayer so that all would know how this happened, that it wasn't by happenstance, that it wasn't by coincidence, but that was through the power of Jesus Christ, aided by his Father or directed through his Father, so that it knew that the Father was the second witness to this, that it had taken place on the Father's power, that this was God ordained and testified to the Son. And he says, "Lazarus, come forth." And I felt life tingle in my bones, and as if just waking up from a long sleep. And I did the mummy shuffle, all wound in clothes and pounds of nard. And then he asked them to help free me, unbind me. I want to mention, sometimes when somebody is set free and given a new life, we think they should unbind themselves from all the past sin and drudgery. But God calls his people to be the ones that aid in that process of unbinding them from the past death, instead of shaming them for wearing grave clothes. If you have your spiritual hearing aids turned up, that's a message that Jesus gives to us through this miracle. But it was more than that. It was more than a miracle to me when he calls Lazarus, "Come forth." It wasn't just a gift to Mary and Martha. It was a sign to every believer. One, of his power. Two, of his character. Three, of who would win the great controversy struggle. And in doing that amazing gift, in doing that amazing thing, he testified to all who were doubting that he is life itself. with that amazing miracle, so many began to believe. I wish I could tell you everybody. There were multitudes of people who recognized this incredible miracle and began to share it, and it went out like wildfire, faster than your internet. And as the message went out, people began to come to see this miracle. But there were those who didn't believe. Or maybe that's not even a fair way of saying it. There were those who were threatened by the reality that Jesus was the source of life. And Caiaphas thought that what was going to happen is that Jesus was going to raise up and there would be a battle between the Romans and the Jews, and then the Romans would wipe out the Jews and he would lose his power and all the people would lose their power. So he began to prophesy to say, don't you recognize that it's necessary that one man should die that the whole nation might not perish? It was a prophecy that would come true, that one would die to give us life. But it also was the culmination of the miracles. You see, seven is an incredible number in the Jewish accounting, and this was the seventh miracle, the perfect set, the sign that came to the end and the close of probation, if you would, for the Jews, their opportunity to believe with this miracle. And he had already announced to them when they told of his unbelief in a story called Lazarus and the Rich Man, and he told the story with using my name, and at the end he says, you wouldn't even believe if one were raised from the dead. And they didn't believe. They'd ask for signs and miracles. He gave them seven sign miracles. Opportunity one after another to believe, and they rejected each one. With that resurrection, there were days ahead, and you very seldom think of what took place after that because that resurrection is so powerful. But I had life now to live, and I'd chosen to live my life every day to testify to the one who'd given me life. Have you received a new life? Do you live your life to praise the one who's given you a new life? Do you live your life to testify to others of the reality of his power? Of the resurrection that he gave you from a dead life. We went together to the house in Bethany of Simon the leper, also Simon the Pharisee, who had been healed from leprosy and was coming to have this party to honor Jesus. And you can imagine the Pharisees turned out in number. And I came with Jesus. And there were crowds of people who pressed into the Simon the Pharisee's house to try to get a glimpse of Jesus and me. His testimony, his picture, his declaration, his claim to life. There were lots of things that went on there, but I will suffice it to say, after that experience where Mary was there and she had come to hear that Jesus was going to die, but there at that place, they began to talk about him coming in and the triumphal entry, and she rejoiced. And at the very moment that she had planned to take a spikenard offering and put at Jesus' feet because of his death, she decided to turn around with joy and anoint him as the king who was going to triumph. And she broke the spikenard and put it on his feet. You know the responses of those who themselves were sinners. That's how we often respond to those who we can't understand. With that event, we entered the next day into triumphal entry. That's what it's called, because it was like a king coming into his kingdom, and that's what the Messiah had been promised to do, and that's what everyone was expecting, including the Jews. And they feared as the mountains began to sing, "Hosanna to the Son of David," with people lined up all around recognizing that Jesus had brought me to life. And just in case you didn't recognize, guess who it was who led the donkey? You may doubt that that's correct. I just encourage you to read Desire of Ages 572 as it shares that I'm the one who led the donkey into Jerusalem, and beside me there's a group of hosts of others who've been brought and freed from this kingdom, because I was the one who was the testimony of what kind of Messiah he would be. He had come to conquer Satan, to destroy the works of the devil. And he did it one at a time. Yes, there's myself and the widow of Nain's son and Jairus' daughter and all of us walking. But besides that, there are lepers who've been healed. There are those who were given their sight back. There are those who came forward who were lame and now could dance ahead of it. And they threw down the palm branches to symbolize his victory. And they threw down their cloaks to symbolize their submission. And as he marched into Jerusalem, everyone was sure that he was about to take his kingdom. And the truth is, he already had. He'd brought life out of death. The rest of the story is not exciting in the sense of joyful, as that very night Judas betrayed Jesus and turned him over. As they took him and did a quick mock trial, and then had another trial in the morning to try to justify what they had done at night, and then put those together for the purpose of proclaiming their justice in crucifying Jesus. And they hung Jesus there, and with that scene, the earth itself turned black and heavens withdrew as the sun was placed on the cross. And it seemed sure that Satan had won, and for a moment it was as if all that we had done was with no value. But you know, I recognized he has resurrection power. He's able to bring life from death. He said at one time, no one takes my life from me. I have the power to lay down my life, and I have the power to pick it up again. And when the tomb burst open and he didn't have to say, "Jesus, come forth," he came forth with all his power and majesty, and he was alive again. But you see, I came with a starting message: I'm a miracle. But now, because of his resurrection, so are you. For me, I had to say, what will I do with this new life that's given me? Some of you have gone through the experience where you thought that you were going to die because of some medical diagnosis or some circumstances, and then you were paused to say, what am I going to do to spend the rest of my life? For every sinner who's been touched by God, you've been given a new life. His calling to each of us is to be a testimony. And just as I walked into Jerusalem to testify to who he is, you have the opportunity to testify today of who he is. Not only that he's given you life, let the world see that you've changed, that there's a new life in you because the resurrected God is living inside of you. He lives to make intercession, and you are his miracle. Stand with me as we sing.